Hi, this is Joe Getz from Current Cider in Percocet, Pennsylvania, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 14.
Hey there, hold on to your hats. We're going to need a bit of extra special help to get to Ciderville. Mr. Quince, is the portal open? We got a whole bunch of us trying to get into Ciderville.
Cider Chat, the portal is ready to open. Counting 5, 4... 3, 2, 1. You have lift off. See you soon in Ciderville.
Thanks, Mr. Quince. Woohoo! What a crazy ride that was. All right, everybody. It's time to, kick back. Let me get myself a little situated. I'm going to get over here. All right, I'm almost ready. Here we go.
Yeah, whew. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. I am Aria Windcaller, your Cider MC. And here we meet each week at One Orchard Lane by hook or by crook to chat about the virtues of cider, the land of the maker, cider maker that is, and chat about all things related to cider. Whew, it's been quite a week, and I am just thrilled to be back with you, chatting about one of our most favorite topics, how do we make cider? And we have a special guest this week. His name is Joe Getz, and he is from Current Cider in Pennsylvania. So we'll be speaking to Joe and a little bit what he is doing with the Pennsylvania Cider Guild in a moment. Meanwhile, I am so thankful for all the folks who participated in the recent Cider Swag Contest that Angry Orchard helped me with by donating what they call their Orchard Glassware, which was specifically designed for drinking cider. The other cider swag that will be sent out to the other amazing citizens of Ciderville are the cool paddle bottle openers. They are flat, metal, and will be a neat addition to the Lucky Winner's Cider Bar. And there was also those crazy-looking Angry Orchard keychains, which will also be sent out later this week. I imagine that the keychains might never come out of the cellophane wrappings, as they will probably become collector items. Thank you, Angry Orchard. You know, I recently saw Ryan Burke on a television commercial for Angry Orchard, and he is the head cider maker. I just want to say, dude, you're looking good, and I'm looking forward to trying your future cider creations. The thing about Angry Orchard that impressed me when I visited their innovation center in Walden, New York, is that I clearly saw how they are helping out not just themselves, but the entire cider community. And they do that by continually educating the public's cider palate. They have a cool place where you could go and see the history of cider, and their ciders are going to be changing. So stay tuned, because Ryan, he is a craft cider maker, and I expect greatness from the guy and Anna Hassan, who is working alongside Ryan, because they wouldn't settle for anything less. Thank you, Angry Orchard. Which leads me to why I chose who I did for the top cider swag prize. I'm going to call him Mr. West Virginia. He left a great review on Stitcher, and that's one of the places, if you have Android, that you could download that app to listen to Cider Chat. He wrote to me an incredible email besides the actual review that I want to share with you. He goes, I wrote a review on Stitcher. It was amazingly hard to find out how, but I prevailed. I spent all day crafting the greatest review ever in my head, and when I got home from work, I lost it all. So I hope this will do instead. I did want you to know that I'm a complete knob when it comes to creating cider, and I found your podcast when I went looking for anything I could find on cider making about 3 days ago. I have already listened to all the episodes. I drive a trash truck, so I have plenty of time to listen to interesting things to keep my brain from turning to mush. your podcast is right on top of the list for shows I eagerly wait for. I am looking for any good info I can find. I just finished fermenting my first 2 gallons, and already I would love to have a cidery one day. I am ordering the new Cider Maker's Handbook after hearing about it in your interview with the guy from Angry Orchard. Please keep up the great content. Yes, I really am going to go back and listen to them all again with a notebook in hand. Well, Mr. West Virginia, you inspire me. And make sure you open that cardboard box carefully when it arrives at your doorstep with your 2 Angry Orchard glasses. To see a complete list of who won what swag, you could send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com, and I'll let you know. Alrighty, now that we are solidly on Orchard land in the bustling center of Ciderville, I want to make sure to say hi to some of Cider Chat's new buds via Twitter. We have @SteveJonas6. We also have @JaredBrennett, @MillstoneCellars, Far From The Tree, whose Twitter feed is @FFTTCider, and a new cider store in Amsterdam, Netherlands recently opened, and they could be found @CiderAmsterdam. And there was many of you who we've been connecting on Twitter, and certainly there's a bunch of new likes on Facebook, so thank you for that. But there was one thing that kind of stood out, a recent Twitter group that I connected with, and they are @AspalKnights, who are a team of knights in the UK. I mean, how cool is that? You know, I'm not sure what that means, but dang, I would so love to hang out with some knights and drink cider and feast into the night, singing songs and dancing. Ooh, that would be too much fun. I like that attitude. That is something that I think Ciderville is all about, just feasting and having fun and finding the best in every cider. There are many more I'd like to mention, but Joe Getz of Current Cider in Pennsylvania is waiting. So for now, let's grab a glass and join this chat. Just wonder how the weather's doing.
Well, it's been pretty beautiful. It was about 68 here yesterday.
No way. I'm jealous. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a little brewery tour. We walked around one of the local towns. It was a beautiful day. Today, it's unfortunately back in the 30s, so
yeah,
it's a little chilly, but I think that's going to stick around for a while now.
Well, that's the craziness of this weather. Where is Perkasie, Pennsylvania?
Perkasie is on the eastern edge of Pennsylvania. It's about an hour north outside of Philadelphia.
An hour north. So is that like near the Delaware Water Gap or?
Yeah, getting up that way. It's close to like New Hope is a big tourist town around there.
Oh, yeah. You
know, Lambertville, New Jersey.
Right.
It's sort of across the river from that. Yeah. Northern Bucks County.
Okay, great. I am pretty well versed in Pennsylvania. I've traveled extensively there. So let's begin with the cider company, Current Cider, and the Pennsylvania Cider Guild. But let's first start with what you're doing with Current Cider. I want to start with the name, actually.
The word current and the spelling is sort of pulled from Scandinavian languages, a little bit of a conglomeration of a few things. So it's a made-up word. It's not anything to do with black currants, the fruit, or anything like that, which we often get asked a lot. So I sort of just made it up from my past, more or less.
Well, that's probably a wise thing today with branding and whatnot. How did you get into cider making?
I had been brewing beer for about 8 years or 9 years up to this current point. I started working at a local homebrew store about 4 years ago, and that was, you know, at the point where I got a little more serious about fermentation in general. I had just been very casually brewing until I started working there. After that, I just sort of, you know, jumped headfirst into fermentation, you know, started really furthering my brewing knowledge. Got into winemaking, cider making, mead making. Basically anything you can ferment, I sort of started to dabble in. So I got into it really heavy about 4 years ago, and then 2 years into that journey, decided I wanted to do it professionally. So the obvious choice that everybody makes is to start a brewery, which I had some ambitions to do. I had been brewing way longer than I had been cider making, but the market in southeastern Pennsylvania for brewing is absolutely fierce. It's a really strong market. There's a ton of phenomenal breweries around here. So instead of jumping into that sort of pool, decided to start a hard cider company and go that direction. The market is pretty wide open here. It's a little more crowded since we started initially, but it just seemed like a better, I don't like to say business decision because, it's still something I love. I didn't sort of make a compromise from a brewery, but it just seemed to make more sense to get going as a small company.
Now, I noticed that some of the ciders that you are producing, you made a really specific point, certainly on the website, saying that it's not what we would expect as a traditional American cider. You're more going towards you went kind of a broad range there, saying English, French, and Spanish, which they would all consider are absolutely different and unique styles unto their own. It sounds like you're not really doing any kind of sweetening. You're using some honey, but no back sweetening, just using the apple juice and making the must and going from there. Could you give me a little bit more and everybody in Ciderville a little bit background on that?
On our website, when I make mention of all those great European ciders and say that our ciders are not what you would expect as an American cidery, there's just such a stigma in the general public of what cider is. And more often than not, your average consumer, you say, hey, do you like cider? And their comparison in their brain is they probably had, Woodchuck or Angry Orchard or any of those big guys, which tend to be a little sweeter. So we're always fighting what is cider in the U.S. There seems to be two very different sides, with the big stuff, the big conglomerate producers, and then craft cider, which I think more mimics European style ciders, whether it be French or English or Spanish or any of those guys. Mm. So we try and create to our consumer a little bit of an expectation in that, hey, this isn't super sweet. If you're into sweet ciders, this might not be what you're looking for, but if you're looking for something different or craft or dry, then if you're familiar with European ciders, this is probably a product you're going to like. So
American cider makers are in that period of time where everyone's wrangling with the definition, the education, and how you bring the consumers forward on the same path so that there's some type of consistency. Your ciders are, you're going around at ABV, and that's alcohol by volume of around 5.5. And then I saw the one cider, the cafe cider. I do want to talk to you about that because you made that with coffee, and that's around 3.5%. So what that tells me, and I could be wrong, is that you're purely, again, just using the apple juice and then fermenting out and creating that unique style with that those specific apples, which I also want to ask you, they're from local orchards primarily, and are you pressing on site? So there's a couple questions in there for you.
As far as the ABV goes, everything we make is at 5.5%. That's more as a demand of the Pennsylvania laws than it is of my personal preference as a cider maker to what I like to be making. So we are limited to 5.5% max ABV by Pennsylvania because we produce as a brewery license. In PA, you can also produce with a winery license, and then you're not limited by 5.5%. but there are very different distribution back-end laws associated with both licenses. So as a cider maker in Pennsylvania, you kind of have to make a choice as to what your business model is and what license will support that. So that's a quick hit on the 5.5% that most of our ciders are. The 3.5% on the cafe was just a function of making a 5.5% base cider and blending it with some flash brewed coffee. So the dilution just brought it down to 3.5 from the 5.5 of our base cider for that particular cider.
Pennsylvania is a tough, it's a commonwealth, it's not a state. And having traveled through there quite a bit, and a lot of folks who aren't really aware of Pennsylvania, it's like one of the largest states in the union. Takes about how many hours to drive, you know, across. It could be like 8 hours. Is that right? Am I right at 8 hours? I think so, right?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's a hike if you go the full distance.
Right. And when you buy beer in Pennsylvania, you can only buy it by the case, or you go to a bar and you could get individuals or six packs, but you can't go classically to like what a lot of folks could go to a package store or a liquor store and get bottles as easily. So there's some kind of tough standards that you have to get up to, and I think we'll kind of hold that a little bit for the PA Cider Guild or Pennsylvania Cider Guild. But getting back to that cafe coffee, what was the idea behind having coffee infused, I guess, into the cider? Was it thinking about having good apple pie and a good cup of coffee? It's kind of unique.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. You know, I can't take full credit for the concept. You know, as a cider maker and an owner, I'm constantly monitoring trends across the U.S., what other producers are making. And that's something I had seen some of the West Coast guys do. So I thought I'd give it a shot and see what it was like. There was two cideries I noticed doing it on the West Coast. The one is Seattle Cider Company, which I'm sure is the bigger one that people will be familiar with. They had made a coffee cider as a one-off batch. So I wanted to give that a shot. It sounded really interesting to me. I didn't really know a lot about coffee. You know, I'm not a big coffee drinker. It's just not something I knew a ton about. So I partnered up with a very popular roaster in Philadelphia here, Reanimator Coffee. And their team, you know, we sort of met and we tried a lot of coffees. I told them what I wanted to do. I brought some cider down for them, some base cider. They were all cider fans, and we just spent some time, you know, blending all their different roasts into our base cider and trying it out. And, you know, we worked on it for a while and came up with the final recipe. It's definitely unique. I feel like it's a love-hate sort of thing, but if you like both coffee and cider, I think people really, really enjoy it.
Is it a rich amber color? What's the profile?
Yeah, amber's probably a good description for it. It's honestly not as dark as I anticipated it being, but yeah, a nice amber color. The coffee really comes through in the nose. You get a lot of floral notes off the coffee. We chose a very lightly roasted coffee. Reanimator in general doesn't do dark roast. They're pretty gentle on the beans for their particular roast styles, which played really well with the coffee because you don't get any really burnt characteristics out of it, and it's not too much dark. You're really drawing a lot of the peach and some floral characters out of the coffee beans themselves. So it plays really nice with a good, clean base cider. It's almost, when you taste it, it's almost like drinking two different things at one time. It does this really crazy thing where at the very front it tastes a lot like cider. You get the apples and the notes off the base cider, and then the back end of the tasting experience sort of rounds into the coffee, and you get the slightly darker notes, the more caramels and dark flavors off the coffee, and then you can really taste the coffee on the back end and the finish. So it's a very unique sort of tasting experience.
Yeah, I'm getting thirsty just listening to you. Now, the rest of your ciders, and I see that you have about 7 listed on the website again. You have the daily, and then you dry hop the daily, and you have what's called the earth. Dry hopped it with mosaic hops. Now, hops, you know, for American cider makers, there are a number of folks working with hops now, and they could be a little persnickety. Have you had any tips on that you could share with listeners on what you found working with hops and why you like to work specifically with that hop, which is mosaic?
Yeah, Earth was really fun to develop. I mean, there's a lot of great cider, hop cider available now on the market. I think the first one I ever had that I enjoyed was from Anthem. Quick backstory, working at a homebrew store, you get to try a lot of really good, but also a lot of really bad things that come through the store that people want help with. And hop cider is one of those things that can go kind of bad pretty quick. So I had been exposed to a bunch of, you know, homemade hop ciders as well as commercial stuff. So my overexposure to things that aren't great sort of helps in getting to a good recipe a little quicker sometimes. So with my experience, you know, I kind of had an idea of what works in cider and what doesn't work. So in development of Earth, you know, I started with, I think I played with maybe 9 or so hops initially. Started with the big C's from brewing, so that's Cascade, Centennial. Started there. Anything that was really bright, I gave a shot. You know, anything that has sort of citrusy or sort of bright characteristics like that, we tried. Mosaic in particular has a very grapefruity note to it, which just played really well with the cider that we're producing with our juice blend that we wanted to use for that. So we tried a lot of things. Some were good, some were bad. Cascade is also really nice. You know, it was kind of a toss up between those two, but I thought Mosaic was a little stronger in the end.
Right, and you dry hopped it, and cider makers or listeners might not quite know what that means. So if you could just explain that, and how long are you dry hopping it for at the back end there?
Yeah, so dry hopping is just a technique stolen from brewing. In brewing, when you're boiling your wort, when you're making the beer pre-fermentation, you're adding hops throughout the boiling process. And then any hops you add after boiling are referred to as dry hopping, usually during fermentation or post-fermentation in a secondary vessel. That's just dry hopping. So anything you add after really the hot side process is dry hopping. So basically for Earth, we dry hop with the mosaic for about 3 days in our secondary vessels. And that, you know, extracts a lot of the flavor and aroma from the hops without getting into too much of a vegetal characteristic. You can get some grassy notes if you get an over extraction, and that 3 days is what works for us. For our ciders, as you change alcohol content in the base juice, you know, different things, different acidities are going to extract at different rates from the hops. So, you know, the mileage will vary as far as extraction goes. You know, some guys making local hop cider, I know, Millstone down in Maryland, they do a hop cider, and I think they're about 2 weeks on their dry hopping. So, you know, it all depends what you're going for in the end product and how your base cider works with the hops. It can vary pretty greatly, but we do about 3 days on the mosaic.
And are you broadcasting that into the must? How are you adding the hops?
Yeah, we throw, we use pellet hops, just like a brewery would. We use hop bags, so they're filled with, you know, capacity, whatever size the hop bag is. Mm-hmm. You know, just thrown right into the vessel to sit for a few days.
Great, thank you for that. And you mentioned Anthem, and that's Anthem out in Oregon. I imagine, are you able to get that cider in Pennsylvania? Do you have a good supply of cider, you know, store selling cider on the shelves, or is it difficult still for locals to get cider?
In general, cider in Pennsylvania is a little sparse. The laws make it difficult for a lot of companies to put PA into their distribution. So Anthem in particular, we can get most of their varieties do come into Pennsylvania. I think like their big three or four are here most of the time and pretty available.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting cider market. I mean, that all goes back to the pretty restrictive laws that cider has to follow here in Pennsylvania. It definitely affects what's available. We definitely miss out on a lot of stuff here in Pennsylvania, and it's mm-hmm. pretty unfortunate for the time being. But, you know, we're all pushing for legislative change as cider makers, and, you know, the Cider Guild, that's pretty much their main focus at this point is legislative change through the process.
Yeah. Well, I am kind of biting at the bit to talk about the guild, but I want to talk still a little bit more about your ciders, because you have the Bees, which has honey. So are you calling that a sizer at all? And do you use that term?
Yeah, we don't call it a sizer. And really the defining reason we don't is just because we use the honey as a back sweetener in that cider. So the honey itself doesn't actually ever go through fermentation. So it's just fresh honey. It's not fermented honey. If we did ferment it, then it would technically be a sizer.
I see.
So it's just a sort of technical classification, yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds lovely, though. I always, honey is just a nice attribute to go with any kind of cider. So that sounds really interesting to me. And then the other one that what piqued my interest, not that they didn't all, was the Tropic, because I noted that you're infusing the cider with pineapple. And I don't know if you have island connections or, you know, where that came from, but why don't you talk a little bit about the Tropic cider that you make?
Yeah, Tropic. It was one of the ciders that I started playing with very early in the process of getting the company going in R&D. You know, a lot of people make fruited ciders, you know, cherry or, you know, just lots of different fruits. I hadn't seen too many people playing with pineapple. But I just thought it would lend itself well to cider. It's bright, it's acidic. I thought it would blend well. The only other commercial example I could find in PA without, you know, stretching myself was Ace makes a pineapple cider. Theirs is a little different. It's a little sweeter than ours. You know, the Tropic is still really dry. Everybody kind of thinks pineapple in their head and thinks sweet. You know, pineapple juice itself is very sweet. But the pineapple character in Tropic is pretty subtle. In general, across the board, as a cider maker, I try not to let adjuncts or additions or anything else besides the actual apples take the forefront. So I typically flavor pretty lightly anything that isn't just apples. And that's definitely true in Tropic. The pineapple character is very light. It's very subtle. It might even be missed if you weren't really sort of 100% aware it was there. So you know, the pineapple notes just sort of add to the apple notes.
Right. There is another cider company I know that's going to be playing with pineapple, and that's a new startup in Maui called Maui Cider Company. And I've chatted a little bit with them, not on the podcast at this point, but they're definitely looking at it. And of course, they would have an amazing source right there. I think that's really great that there's something going on in Pennsylvania with pineapple. It really shows that no matter where you are in the world, if you know how to bring in those different properties of what you want to create a certain characteristic for your cider, you can do it. And the sky's the limit. The apple juice is so forgiving and so welcoming, really. So the farm, you have the farm. We haven't talked the farm or the spice yet. And the farm is a farm style. Do any of the other ones have any of that kind of like back end, like a little bit of farm style? Or is the farm cider that you make really the only one that has that maybe malolactic finish.
Farm, you know, it's definitely farmhouse. It definitely has funk. You know, we make that with a combination of a cultured white wine yeast, as well as an addition of, you know, a collection of bugs that we sort of borrowed from. We share a space with a brewery, so we borrowed some of that from some of the funky beers they make. So we came up with that blend of wild character to go with the white wine yeast. And that's probably my personal favorite from the lineup at this point. I just really love sours, whether it be beers or ciders or anything. So, you know, it's just one of my favorite styles. So that was really fun for me to make. We're not making that one all the time. It's a little bit of a limited release. So we made a batch of that, and it sold out. I have a few bottles stashed away for myself to see how they age for a long time. But I can't wait to make that one again soon.
That sounds great. Now, when you are making the cider, what kind of equipment are you using? And do you have an orchard? Are you getting juice locally from orchards and pressing offsite and then bringing it?
We don't press. We don't have any of our own pressing equipment. For the majority of our ciders, we use a base blend that we get from one large local supplier. We happen to be very close to a very large press house who buys a lot of apples through mostly Pennsylvania. They go up to New York and out to Ohio on a few variety gaps throughout the season. They go through, I think it's a few million gallons of juice a year. They basically package their own brand of, you know, fresh press juice throughout the year. So in addition to doing that, they wholesale press to cider producers, which is great. And they're about, you know, 5 miles from our new location. So they've been great to work with. So that's the press house we get a lot of stuff from. We also work directly with a few local farms who have their own orchards and growing some cider varietals and some dessert varietals. So we've made a few batches with juice directly sourced from the local farms. There's another press house sort of close to us that runs a 100-year-old press that is absolutely amazing to watch work. You know, it really hasn't changed in so long. The process is still the same. So we work with the local orchard and that press house to get some specialty blends as well. So most of our juice comes from the big local house, and then we get some specialty stuff from the small guys as well.
And now you are based at a brewery. So how is that set up? You're not using the brewing equipment, I don't imagine. I imagine they're probably pretty maxed out. How are you dovetailing with a brewery? And correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think you are. You're at a brewery right now.
We got started sharing a space with Round Guys Brewing Company in Lansdale. They were kind of friends of mine personally, just from the local beer scene, from knowing them through the homebrew store and supplying them. And they were actually a client of mine for my personal freelance design business. So I was doing their artwork for a while for their, you know, cans and whatever other materials they needed. So when we got started with the cider project, you know, they kind of opened their doors to us and said, hey, we have some extra space, you know, if you want to move in here and work out, you know, a lease agreement. So it was very helpful for us to get started as a very small cider producer. There's a lot of hurdles, so that helped us jump over a pretty big one as far as space goes. So we teamed up with those guys. You know, we still operate all of our own equipment. We have all our own tanks and vessels and pumps and fittings and hoses, and we literally don't share any equipment, but we sort of just moved into their space. So it's a really fun collaborative atmosphere. You know, like I said, I've been brewing for a long time, so it's fun to be so close to the beer still and then, you know, making the cider in the same building. We started there, and now we are expanding. We ran out of room there pretty quickly, so we're actually moving into a different brewery Another friend of mine owns a much, much bigger production facility, are moving into Free Will Brewing Company in Percocet.
So the production's increasing. What are you typically looking at for the production for this coming year and to be bottling for 2016? Because you made the cider already, or are you making cider year-round?
We produce year-round, so we do a lot of short turnaround ciders as well as aged ciders. So, you know, a lot of like orchard producer cideries, they'll just produce once a year like a winery would. Because we have access to juice more or less all year, it gets a little sparse in July and August, but we're able to produce a lot of quick turnaround ciders. You know, that's kind of what we're looking at right now. As far as the expansion, we are super excited about that. You know, we're looking to do around 1,500 to 2,000 barrels of production next year, or this year now, it's 2016. So that's our sort of goal for this year, which was a huge jump from what we did in our first 6 months last year. So it's super exciting. It's, super nerve-wracking as well, but that's all part of the fun.
Absolutely. If folks wanted to get some of your cider, how far out does it get distributed? And I imagine that you're self-distributing, and it would only be in bottles. It wouldn't be on draft anywhere. Is that correct?
We actually only do draft, or I won't say only, probably about 95% draft at this point. The majority of our product goes into Philadelphia to bar accounts. We are self-distributing for the time being. That may be changing soon with our jump in production numbers. But yeah, pretty much everything goes into kegs and then it goes down to the city. You know, Philadelphia is a fantastic craft beverage market. For anybody not familiar with Philadelphia, it's just a fantastic place to be if you like any variety of alcohol. So the support has been phenomenal. But most of our stuff just goes down to the city, goes to bars, and people can enjoy it on draft. We do bottle occasionally right now. But we do sort of special releases for that. So we promote that through our social media when it happens.
Well, who knew? Well, thanks for updating me on that. I didn't imagine it was only on draft primarily. When you would go into like a classic Philadelphia, I'm going to say beer bar, because, you know, they do have some amazing beer bars. How many taps of cider might you see on hand?
The good craft bars in Philly these days, you'll see one or two cider lines. There are a few great accounts that are supporting more than that. There's a couple of bars around. You know, there's one in the slightly in the suburbs. They have a whole cider half to their bar. So I think they're running 8 taps right now. But that's definitely an anomaly. So usually one or two is pretty typical of cider right now in most of the good spots in Philly.
Well, let's give them a shout out. What's the bar with 8 taps?
Yeah, that's Teresa's. It's in the suburbs. I think technically it's in Wayne. Sort of a wine bar and a craft beer bar, and they really support cider a lot. So almost always have local on draft. So they're a really, really great place to stop for anybody who likes cider.
Mm-hmm. Is there much lore in the area? You know, Valley Forge is right, I don't know, just a little bit north of Wayne and that region, and that's a huge national park. Is there much lore around cider that you find in Pennsylvania, or certainly the area that you're in, and the tradition of it, and folks talking about it in terms of what it was back at the start of the country?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know how prevalent that is. When we do local events, you know, I like to, especially in the fall, I did a couple of seminars for local homebrew clubs and, you know, a couple of events at bars. We get to make reference to a lot of those colonial things, and people in Philadelphia are pretty in tune with colonial history in general just because of the area. So it's a nice bridge. You know, you can sort of add on to some talks with a lot of that colonial stuff, and people can really relate to it here around Philadelphia. So that historical stuff, I love it. You know, there's a couple of National Historic Landmarks that'll do historic brewing demos as well as distilling and cider making. So there's a lot of support for the historical side of cider making here in the area. So yeah, it definitely adds to the fun of it and adds another layer of exploration for anybody interested in cider around this area.
Yeah, I bet back in the day at Valley Forge, some of those folks would have really appreciated some cider. I could only imagine. In a moment, we'll be speaking with Joe about the Pennsylvania Cider Guild. But meanwhile, if you're listening to this from the perspective of, hey, I'd like to start a cidery, then I hope this info is really valuable for you. Because Current Cider is a new cidery at its best. It's only a year or so old, even though Joe has been involved in this for a while. And so is the Pennsylvania Cider Guild. So there's growing pains with everything. And I think that that is something to kind of look at in the U.S. across the board, is that folks are still getting their land legs and trying to get a sense of where they're moving and helping each other. And that really resonated with me in a big part because it's a good reminder that cider guilds and cider associations are all working towards the same goal, to make the best damn cider possible and help the cider trade be a successful career if you choose to get into it. I like that. I like that people like Joe take on roles like vice president of the Pennsylvania Cider Guild, or Ryan Burke of Angry Orchard is on the board for United States Association of Cider Makers. These are good things for U.S. cider makers overall. And so as you're listening to this piece on the Pennsylvania Guild, think about that. And think about where you are in your path of cider making. Maybe it's about time that you pick up the phone and call up your local guild and get on the track to help yourself and help others move the cider agenda forward. Now let's get back to this chat with Joe Goetz of Current Cider in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania Cider Guild started in very late 2014. We really got more organized 2015, sort of early 2015, and then we really got the ball rolling last year with a couple of things. Current membership, I think the last time I looked, was 26 cideries throughout Pennsylvania, which is great and always growing. We're always adding new members. So our main goal at this point is just to be a representative body and voice for the cider producers in Pennsylvania, both to the general public and to the state itself, specifically right now in a lot of legislative issues that we're working through. So we try and promote awareness of cider as a beverage and as an industry. You know, Pennsylvania is one of the largest apple producing states in the country, so we get a lot of support from the agricultural side. Both the PA Board of Ag and Penn State runs an extension program that we work with as well to, you know, create awareness and grow the guild, both through consumers and producers. So it's been really great so far. You know, it's still young. We're still sort of growing our roots for the process. You know, it's been really effective, even just in its infancy, in affecting some change and getting the word out about PA cider.
Mm-hmm. And what is a cider apple crop like in Pennsylvania? I mean, you have a large production of apples, but most of those would be kind of considered classically eating apples. But how about the cider? And for folks who aren't aware of Pennsylvania, as I know it, it's just a spectacular state to go into because it has rolling farmland, sometimes as far as the eye can see, beautiful, beautiful farm houses, a lot of them made out of stone. In Philadelphia, where you are, you have that row house quality, but the state is so diverse from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, and in between, there is quite a bit of agriculture. But how many older cider variety apples are folks finding? And are there any like little hot spots or, you know, secret gardens or secret orchards, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, in regards to cider-specific varietals being grown in Pennsylvania, it's definitely growing as far as the number of trees actually in the ground with the resurgence of cider production in the U.S. in general. You know, orchard owners started to pay attention a little more to cider varietal apples. A farmer is not going to stick something in the ground they can't, you know, necessarily make a profit off of. Mm-hmm. As they're seeing the market grow for their you know, commodities, they're sort of shifting their acreage over to adding some cider varietals, which is great. And that happened, I think, a little more in the Pacific Northwest, faster, and New York and Virginia, I think, are a little ahead of Pennsylvania. But, you know, we're showing orchard owners that we will buy those apples now, and there's just more of a market. So they're starting to really get more interested in growing those varietals for us, which is great. So a lot of orchards are producers themselves, so they've changed over some of their varieties so that they can start making their own hard ciders, which is just an extra sort of business on their existing business, which is great for those producers. For someone like ourselves, for Current Cider, you know, we don't have an orchard, so we're more reliant on farmers adding those varietals that we need, things that we're seeking out. The guild is actually very involved with starting research projects to see what cider varietals will actually grow in Pennsylvania. There wasn't a lot of research devoted to that. Typically, most cider producers were members of the Pennsylvania Winemakers Association, and you know, most of the research dollars from that are obviously going to go to research on grapes, which, you know, is good stuff, but doesn't really help a cider producer. So with the guild, we're able to sort of get some funds appropriated out of Harrisburg to research those cider varietals for farmers and make sure the right stuff's going in the ground that everybody's going to profit from in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do see quite a bit of small wineries as you drive throughout Pennsylvania. And so I was wondering how the two kind of work together. And I imagine that folks are really keen on growing some, you know, really hardy cider apples at this point. If folks are like looking at getting into cider making in Pennsylvania, are there resources with the Pennsylvania Cider Guild that they could kind of connect in with as a network, I'm sure, but the helping a new cider maker who wants to get the licensing going, is that something that they could contact folks at the guild?
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to doing the agricultural research and funding, the guild is very active in putting on seminars specifically designed for people interested in starting a cider business, you know, whether it be out of their own orchard or sourcing apples or juice from elsewhere. We've done, last year, I think there were three or four separate seminars throughout the year that were just designed for that purpose, to help people get going. Our board meetings for the guild are always open to the public. There's a membership in the guild. It's called Cider Enthusiast. Those are for people who aren't maybe thinking about doing commercial, but help support the guild and the growth of cider in Pennsylvania. The next step in membership is cidery and planning. So any of those people are more than welcome to join the guild and can come to board meetings and meet lots of people who are in the business already and pick our brains and ask us all the questions. And, you know, it's a good resource for anybody looking to get going. There's a couple of cideries in planning right now that, you know, I talk to on a pretty regular basis. And I know some of the other producers in the guild also have been helping out. So, you know, it's a lot like any of the other craft beverage industries, especially beer, where it's a pretty big family. We're all pretty helpful to each other. You know, we just want to see the industry grow as a whole. So we'll do pretty much whatever we can to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And you said there's about 26 cideries now in Pennsylvania, and probably that's changing by the day. And certainly as you become like a collective voice, hopefully that legislation will change. If I was coming through and I didn't know anything about Pennsylvania, what advice would you give me to find some Pennsylvania cider?
The membership list is on the PA Cider Guild's website, so you can check the full list of all registered members on the website, and they're all clickable links to their respective homepages. So You can see who's in the guild, and there's a relatively new cider trail. It's kind of focused on the eastern side of Pennsylvania. It started by the two owners of Rowan Ashen Winery. They just sort of opened last year, and they're also producing cider as well as their wines. So they're just outside of Kutztown, which is about 2 hours outside of Philadelphia. So that trail is more the eastern Pennsylvania side. You know, there's definitely a lot of stuff right around Philadelphia. I'd say there's 8 or 9 cideries you could hit probably in a day or two within that general area. There's definitely a concentration in the southeastern section of Pennsylvania. There's another concentration sort of from Pittsburgh out to Erie, the northwest corner. Those are the two big concentrations. There's starting to be a new concentration in the northeast section surrounding the Allentown, Bethlehem sort of area. There's a couple of new spots popping up in that area as well. So kind of spread out. Like you said earlier, it's a very big state. So 26 sounds like a big number, but when you spread it over a giant area, there's a lot of, you know, small cideries that are sort of just kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have links to the Pennsylvania Cider Guild on the show notes for this episode. Well, it's so exciting. You know, I think, you know, we said that it's a really big place to be, Pennsylvania. But one thing I found that the folks there are really, really welcoming. It's, again, beautiful drive. There's lots to see. There's good food everywhere to be had. It's kind of unique. Each region of a country calls their food. You know, we have like grinders up in New England, and in Pennsylvania, you call them hoagies. And I think you call soda pop. You know, it's just fun to travel on the cider trail and just see the uniqueness that each region has. And I would say it's probably really worthwhile anyone interested to go and check out Pennsylvania now and then see how it's going to grow. Because I imagine it's going to be growing really quick. It's an area that's really ripe for the picking. Certainly they supported craft beer. It's no doubt they're going to be doing that with cider. Yes, I want to thank Joe Getz of Current Cider in Percy, Pennsylvania. I like that word, Percy. It has a nice ring to it. And certainly some exciting stuff happening in the cider world there. Well, I'm getting myself ready to head out to Portland, Oregon for CiderCon. Pretty excited about that. And one of the ways that you could support this podcast, because I will be recording lots of amazing chats, is to donate. Actually, if you go to the page, the show notes for Joe's chat, that's episode 14, you'll see a little donate button on the bottom, and you could make any donation. Geez, a buck would be nice. Help me get some cider while I'm in Portland. Look, and I'm also going to be setting up a media kit. So if any of you folks out there listening at that level are interested in a media kit, and there's going to be some more stuff coming up on that too, because we do need to get Cider Chat rolling. That's all good. One of the things I'll be talking about in terms of CiderCon is next week, I want to talk about some of the workshops. There's some pretty cool stuff going on there and some of the speakers. So I'll be touching base on that. And I'm just really excited to go there because it's been a while. And when I always think of Oregon, well, I think of the Oregon Country Fair, which I have been to. I know some of the folks who are on the board there. That was an amazing experience. If you never went to that, it's down in Eugene. It happens in the summer. That could be like a whole series, a whole podcast on the Oregon Country Fair. But I also did some mountaineering out on Mount Adams. I think it's like a over 12,000 foot mountain. When I used to do quite a bit of mountaineering, lowering myself into a crevasse where all you see is just blue ice. Fun, fun, fun. Then you do this thing where you go down the mountain. It's called glissading. And that's where you're just on your boots. There's no skis. And you are essentially skiing down on top of the snow. Really cool. You have to be tied in. You have to have an ice axe in case you fall. But, I loved doing that. And I did try to make an ascent up on Mount Baxter. Now, these mountains are part of the Cascade Range. And Baxter Mountain is outside of Washington. They're both in Washington State, but I was I climbed Mount Adams when I was staying in Portland. Too much fun. Yabba-dabba-doo. Well, I'm going to roll out of here, and thank you so much for joining in this chat with myself and Joe Getz. This is Aria Windcolor, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you soon in Ciderville.